ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 24, Text 37. This is the chapter chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. Svarga Aparvaga Dvaraya Nityam Suchi Sade Namaha Namo Aranya Viryaya Chatur Otraya Tanave Svagar Aparvarga Dvaraya Nityam Suchi Sade Namaha Namo Haranya Virayaya Chatur Hotraya Kantave Svagar Aparvarga Tavaryaya Nityam Suchi Sade Namaha Namo Haranya Virayaya Chatur Hotarya Kantave
Namo Aranya Viraya
path of liberation.
The path of liberation.
Dwaraya.
Dwaraya.
Unto the door of. Nityam.
Nityam.
Eternally. Suci Sade.
Unto the most purified.
Namaha. My obeisances unto you. Namaha.
My obeisances.
Aranya.
Gold.
Viryaya. Semen. Chaturahotraya. The Vedic sacrifices of the name. Tantave. Unto one who expands. Translation. My Lord, O Aniruddha, you are the authority by which the doors of the higher planetary systems in liberation are open. You are always within the pure heart of the living entity. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you. You are the possessor of semen, which is like gold, and thus, in the form of fire, you help the Vedic sacrifices, beginning with Chaturahotra. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you. So we'll repeat. My Lord, O Aniruddha.
My Lord, O Aniruddha.
You are the authority by which the doors of the higher planetary systems in liberation are open. You are always within the pure heart of the living entity. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you. You are the possessor of semen, which is like gold. And thus, in the form of fire, you help the Vedic sacrifices, beginning with Chaturahotra. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you. In purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word Swarga indicates a position in the higher or heavenly planetary systems, and the word Apavarga means liberation. Those who are attached to the Karmakandiya activities described in the Vedas are actually entangled in the three modes of material nature. The Bhagavad Gita, therefore, says that one should be above the dominion of fruitive activities. There are different kinds of liberation or mukti. The best mukti is engagement in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Not only does Lord Aniruddha help fruitive actors by elevating them to the higher planetary systems, but he also helps the devotee engage in devotional service by dint of his inexhaustible energy. Just as heat is the source of material energy, the inspiration of Lord Aniruddha is the energy by which one can engage in executing devotional service. Translation again. My Lord, O Aniruddha, you are the authority by which the doors of the higher planetary systems in liberation are open. You are always within the pure heart of the living entity. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you. You are the possessor of semen, which is like gold, and thus, in the form of fire, you help the Vedic sacrifices, beginning with Chaturahotra. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you. Maham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nevase Shusunivani Pastakade Shatarne Om Gyana Timurandasya Ganangana Salakaya Chaksurum Utam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, first of all, I want to ask for the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas that I may say something that's inspiring. Of course, this is a wonderful verse that Lord Shiva is, out of his compassion, he came to the Pachetas when they were on their way to go meditate and follow the orders of their spirit, of their father. And Lord Shiva just appeared to them out of his compassion and preached to him and told them about this wonderful prayer where they could satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course, this prayer, it starts out, of course, he's glorifying the Lord, and it gets on that he also starts to glorify the devotees. And we know that by glorifying the devotees, Krishna is very pleased. Actually, Srila Prabhupada used to give the example that if there's a very rich man who has practically everything, it's very hard to please him. But if he has a son, you can just give him like a little piece of candy or something. The son will become happy, and the father actually becomes pleased that, oh, this person is, pleasing my son. So in the same way, just by pleasing the Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord, Krishna becomes very pleased. He actually becomes more pleased when his devotees are glorified than when he himself is glorified. I'm sure I remember one class where Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna enjoys being chastised by Mother Yasoda, much more than all the prayers of the personified Vedas. So anyways, Lord Shiva, he's offering this very wonderful prayer. And in this part, he's kind of explaining about how the Lord is in the heart of all living entities. And of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, 15:15, it says that he is situated in everyone's heart, and from him come remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge. Actually, in another place in Bhagavad Gita, it also explains how he is the ability in man. So just with these two verses, we should be very humble and know that Krishna is giving us any ability that we have, any power, and he's given us any remembrance, any knowledge, and of course he's also giving forgetfulness. So even like the demons, with their so-called, when they see the Lord, they may be seeing the same Lord that the devotees are seeing, but still Krishna within the heart prompts them that, oh, I want to be the Lord, and they deride Krishna. Even today, there may not be so many demons like in what we read in the Krishna book, but still, just by philosophical, Mayavadi understanding or impersonalism, they're actually kind of like attacking the Lord and trying to kill him in their philosophical ways. And also this knowledge or this remembrance that they're inimical to the Lord is coming from the Lord. Just two kind of stories come to mind. One is this was in the late 70s, and I was a driver during a Christmas marathon, and we were trying to make money for New Vrindavan, and we were selling candles, and I was driving this one devotee around, and we happened to be in Washington D.C., so we stopped by at the temple there, and Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj had just opened a temple in Washington, D.C. It was in a very ghetto part of town. And there were like a handful of devotees there. So we stopped in. We got there late at night, and in the morning, right before the Bhagavatam class, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj asked me if I would give class. And I was a little hesitant. I didn't want to give the class. But he insisted, so I gave the class, and I, you know, chanted Jaya Radha Madhava, read the verse, and then I was just sitting there, and my mind just went blank. I couldn't think of anything to say. Of course, that's always my fear when I give Bhagavatam class, that I'm going to go blank, and I won't remember anything to say, even though I've prepared for the class, and I have some notes and things. Sometimes I don't remember all these things that I want to say. But anyways, in this class, I just went blank. I couldn't think of anything. And then all of a sudden, somebody, you know, that was living in the temple asked a question. It was like a very angry question. And then Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, you know, started to answer it. And they got into this, what seemed to be kind of like a fight. And it kind of went on for a while, but then it gradually got resolved. And at the end, you know, through Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's preaching, this problem that the temple was having got resolved, and there was like a nice, you know, peaceful and happy atmosphere. And that took the whole time of the class. So I didn't speak one word, you know, for the whole class. And after, you know, the class was over, you know, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj came up to me and said, "Oh, thank you for giving nice class." And I said, "But I didn't say anything." He said, "But yeah, but just because, you know, your presence there, we've been having this, you know, problems, and now it's all kind of ironed out and things are looking very good." And of course, you know, that was his encouragement, you know, to me. But somehow or other, I couldn't think of anything to say. So sometimes Krishna also creates this forgetfulness. But there's another story I was thinking of, that I was just on the safari with Jai Pitaka Maharaj, which is a wonderful experience. It happens every year right after Gaur Purnima. If anybody gets the opportunity to go, it's a wonderful experience. And we went to the cave where King Muchikunda was sleeping, and where he kicked Kalyavana and was burnt to ashes. And of course, you know, Krishna went in that cave, so it's a very wonderful, holy place. It's in Andhra Pradesh. I think it's near the town of Vijayawada. Not exactly, but it's kind of like way out in the country. You've got to drive quite a ways to get there. It's a very remote area. But it's a wonderful big cave. And of course, the story is, and there's a lot of, you know, nice instructions within this story, that when Kalyavana, who attacked Mathura, and Krishna and Balaram were thinking, "Oh my God, you know, we're here in Mathura with all our, you know, family members, and here's this Yavana king who was like king of the Malechas, is attacking us, and he had like 30 million soldiers." And they were thinking, you know, Jarasandha's already attacked us 17 times. You know, he's going to come again in a few days and attack us. And if we're fighting, you know, Kalyavana and all his army, maybe Jarasandha will, you know, be able to capture and kill some of the members of the Yadu dynasty. So when they were thinking like this, Krishna decided to create Dwarka. And within one night, Dwarka was created. And while the inhabitants of Mathura, the other dynasty, were sleeping, in that one night, by Krishna's power, they were transferred to Dwarka. And they all woke up in golden palaces. And that was the creation of Dwarka, which was a wonderful pastime. But anyways, oh, actually, it might have happened the day after, but the Kalyavana was actually born from Gargacharya, because one time Gargacharya was insulted by the Yadu dynasty, and he became kind of angry, and he went away, and he thought, I'm going to create somebody that will cause fear for the Yadu dynasty. And so he beget this Kalyavana, who's the king of the Yavanas, king of the Mleches. And anyway, so when he appeared, actually Narada Muni came to Kalyavana and told him about Krishna, because Kalyavana was so powerful, he couldn't find any human combatant to exercise his power. So Narada Muni told him about Krishna. So just hearing the descriptions of Krishna, when Kalyavana came to attack Mathura, Krishna didn't want to fight with him, didn't want to even, touch him. He was a Mlecha. And Krishna started to run. And even though, just to lead him away from Mathura, and just by seeing him, with beautiful description, of his beautiful face, the, beautiful Vijanti garland, the Srivats, the beautiful description that Narada had given to him, he knew that this was Krishna. So he ran after him, and although he was a very fast runner, Krishna was just kind of effortlessly running. Kalyavana was running as fast as he could, and it seemed to be that he could almost catch him. But he couldn't catch him, and he was always outside of the grip of Kalyavana. And Kalyavana, he kept hurling all these insults, like, you're born in the Yadu dynasty, it's a great dynasty, why are you running from me, you should stand and fight. And, it's another example how, even though he was personally right there, seeing Krishna's presence, because he was inimical to Krishna, Krishna within the heart gave him that, intelligence, or that forgetfulness, really. It's really forgetfulness that he wanted to fight with Krishna and defeat him. He wanted to kill Krishna. So Krishna, and of course Krishna, as the ability of man, was giving him all his power and his running ability. But he was running, and he ran a very far distance, all the way from Mathura to South India. And when Krishna went into the cave, Kalyavana followed him, and he went in the cave, he thought, oh, Krishna's been running from me for a long time, now he's hidden in this cave, and he's, lying down sleeping, because he saw this man lying down sleeping. So he went up, and he kicked him with all his might, because he thought it was Krishna. And of course, when this person got kicked, he opened up his eyes, and he looked around, and he saw this Mlecha king, Kalyavana, standing before him. And just by looking at him, he was completely burned to ashes. So when Parikshit Maharaj heard about this from Sukadeva Goswami, he inquired, who was this man sleeping in the cave? And, why did he have such powers that he burned Kalyavana to ashes just by his look? And he explained. And, of course, after Kalyavana was burnt to ashes, then Krishna showed himself to King Muchikunda. Of course, the sleeping person we all know is King Muchikunda. And King Muchikunda, upon seeing Krishna, started to glorify him. And he inquired from him, who are you? But he also told him who he was. And actually, Srila Prabhupada explains that that's actually Vaishnava etiquette, that if somebody from a lesser position or junior, he should always introduce himself first before inquiring from the senior person or from a higher personality. And King Muchikunda followed this etiquette. And King Muchikunda said that actually I'm, in the Iswaku dynasty, but I am not as great as my forefathers. He was very humble. Actually, he was a great devotee. And he had prayed to Krishna many times. And in the past, Gargacharya also had told him that at a certain time he was going to see Krishna. And gradually in his prayers he remembers this. But anyways, King Muchikunda, he was a king that the demigods wanted to, when they were attacked by the demons, they wanted him to help him fight to defeat the demons. And he fought for a very, very long time, giving up his kingdom, his wife. He fought for so long that his whole like dynasty had passed away. And finally, when the demigods got King Kartikeya as their commander-in-chief, they let Muchikunda go. They said, okay, you know, now we have Kartikeya as our commander-in-chief. You've performed such wonderful service. We'll give you any benediction except for liberation, because only Vishnu can give liberation. So King Muchikunda said, I'm very tired. I've been fighting for such a long time. The only thing I want is to have sleep. And also, if somebody wakes me untimely, then I want to be able to, you know, just burn them to ashes by my glance. And actually, he was thinking that Lord Indra had asked him to fight and repeatedly asked him to fight on behalf of the demigods, and he was afraid that King Indra would come again before he had complete rest and would wake him up. So he asked for this benediction like that. And the demigods granted him this benediction that he would have complete sleep and that anyone who woke him up untimely would be burnt to ashes. So that was, you know, his story. And after he had told the story to Krishna, Krishna said, yes, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he told him a little bit about himself. And he said, you're my great devotee, and you've prayed to me repeatedly in the past, so therefore I'm appearing before you now. And because I am here before you, and because I am very favorably inclined to my devotees, you can have whatever you want. I'll give you whatever benediction you want. And of course, King Muchikunda offered these wonderful prayers to Krishna. And in them, he stated that he only wanted pure devotional service. That was his only desire. And then Krishna said, actually, I was only testing you. But just see that you're my great devotee. You've passed the test. You've only wanted, you know, my service. So it's interesting how Krishna tests us. Actually, we're always being tested. Even when we don't think that we're being tested, we're being tested. And we have at any moment, we have the opportunity to completely surrender to Krishna. Actually, one time Srila Prabhupada said that if you're not feeling transcendental ecstasy 24 hours a day, then you're simply cheating yourself. So we have that opportunity always. There's always that possibility. At any moment we can surrender fully to Krishna. Like, who was it? Maharaj Sibi. He surrendered completely in one moment. And it's also available to us. There's so many examples of how Krishna tests his devotees. Can anybody think of any others? Krishna testing his devotees. Also in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes.
Pandavas.
Yeah, the Pandavas. So many tests. Yeah, Ramadev testing Bali Maharaj. Pankajambra. Rukmini, yeah, coming at the last moment, yeah.
Krishna
Yeah. Yeah.
We should give you a big task in this
party. Yeah. Of course, the spiritual master tests his disciples. He asks them to follow, you know, the four regular principles, chant 16 rounds. Those are tests. We have, you know, so many, because we have free will, we always have that ability to choose Krishna or to choose Maya. And so those are our tests, yeah? So this one where I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Mukunda or Lord Chaitanya. I don't know if he went to some classes by I'm forgetting the names right now, but he went to some classes where they weren't preaching pure devotional service, and Lord Chaitanya banished him from his association. Is it Mukunda? Mukunda? Yeah. And then Lord Chaitanya wouldn't even see him. And of course Mukunda became very sad, and all the devotees, you know, went to Lord Chaitanya and they asked if Mukunda could be brought back into the association, and Lord Chaitanya said no. And then Mukunda asked the devotees, "Ask Lord Chaitanya, when will I get his association again?" And Lord Chaitanya said, "Mukunda won't have my association for millions of births." And the devotees went and told Mukunda, Lord Chaitanya said, "You won't have his association for millions of births." And Mukunda started dancing in ecstasy. And of course the devotees were surprised. And they went. And, of course, he was happy because finally he thought, oh my God, after millions of births, I'll be able to see Lord Chaitanya again. I'll have his association. He was ecstatic. And when they told that to Lord Chaitanya said, oh, you know, bring him into my association. And we can see that tests are for different purposes, different reasons. They can be to purify. The tests are to help us come closer to Krishna, to purify. And also sometimes Krishna tests his devotees just to show the world, you know, how great his devotion is and what pure devotion really is, so that we can get an understanding and try to, you know, strive for that type of devotion. Oh, and one thing that this inspiration from Krishna, from the Lord in the heart, who's, of course, here in the verse it says that Krishna is always within the pure heart of the entity. Krishna is in everyone's heart, even the, you know, the animals and the trees, all living entities. Krishna is with them as the Paramatma. And this scientific theory of instinct that, you know, when the animals are born, they have a certain instinct, so they act in a certain way. On one morning walk, Srila Prabhupada was speaking, I believe, with Swarup Damodar Maharaj, and they were talking about instinct. And Srila Prabhupada said that this is one of the most demoniac theories in this world. This theory of when, like, animals or people, they have a certain instinct when they're born. Because it's Krishna in the heart is giving this this knowledge of how they want, you know, according to their past activities and their past desires, they get a certain body. And therefore, they have a certain, like, inclination. And Krishna in the heart is giving this. It's not instinct. It's Krishna. So I was just thinking that was like a very, Prabhupada was very strong about that, that this theory of instinct that the material scientists say is completely atheistic and demoniac. And they should be giving the credit to Krishna. So another wonderful thing is that, you know, Krishna's in the heart and he gives this knowledge and ability and stuff. That this enthusiasm is it's like a very mystical thing. That if you have enthusiasm, on the safari, Bhaktadhira Damodar Maharaj was with us on the safari, and he gave this one class, and he was talking about enthusiasm, and he was saying how we're all lazy, actually. I know myself, I'm lazy when it comes to devotional service. And I don't, you know, appreciate the things that I've been given by Srila Prabhupada and all the devotees, just like Krishna is non-different than his name. So every time we chant Krishna, we're actually associating with Krishna. And we should, you know, be attentive to, you know, this chanting of Krishna. He's actually there. And all his opulences. But because we're kind of lazy, we don't appreciate these things. And he gave the example that just like, you know, if we heard that tomorrow at Mangal Arati they were, you know, giving out, you know, free tickets to America along with $1 million, you know, immediately upon hearing that, our whole consciousness would change. And we'd be like very enthusiastic to get up the next day and come there because we were new, you know, we were going to be getting, you know, a ticket to America and millions of dollars. You know, it would change our whole outlook. We would have so much enthusiasm, you know, to get up the next day and be there. You know, we wouldn't care if there was some cold water or if it was raining. This enthusiasm would, we'd overcome all these obstacles. So in the same way, if we just have this, you know, conviction that, you know, Krishna is there in his name, we have this appreciation that Krishna's holy name is more valuable than anything in the whole world, anything in, you know, the creation. And we have this opportunity to perform some devotional service. You know, if we have this enthusiasm, we overcome all these like obstacles that ordinarily would, which are tests that would keep us from, you know, performing our devotional service. So this enthusiasm is very important. It's very mystical, and it can, when Krishna sees us acting enthusiastically, he helps us, because Krishna, he actually wants us to become purified. He wants us to love him. And he's always trying to help us. He wants it more than we want it. And when we just make these little steps towards Krishna, he rewards us. He actually helps us in so many ways. And sometimes he tests us. But that test, we should always know that when we're being tested, that Krishna loves us and he's testing us for a certain reason, for our own purification. And we should enthusiastically try to carry out, you know, the orders of our spiritual master. So, I don't know, are there any questions or comments? Yeah. Talk about the picture. So this is Ananda Tirtha Prabhu asking about the picture behind me of Srila Prabhupada. It's actually in New Vrindavan at the old Vrindavan farm. Actually, Krishna Shravana Prabhu, my godbrother. You were there, right? Yeah. This is when Srila Prabhupada came over to Old Vrindavan, which was the original farm in New Vrindavan. He drove partway up in this old truck, and then we walked. I was actually on the morning walk with Srila Prabhupada before getting there. And the deities there are Radha Vrindavan Nath, and Radhanath Maharaj was the pujari up there. And I believe there's kartals in Prabhupada's hand. He's probably chanting Jai Radha Madhava before Bhagavatam class. And he gave the Bhagavatam class. And, of course, one nice pastime when he was sitting on this Vyasasan like this is when Srila Prabhupada would give Bhagavatam class, after class, they would make cookies, and Srila Prabhupada would give out a cookie to all the assembled devotees. And this time, because it was like a 2-mile walk, you know, to go to this farm up on top of the hill, nobody brought any prasadam for Srila Prabhupada to give after his class. So Radhanath Maharaj, who was the pujari, was thinking of, oh my God, you know, what are we going to give Srila Prabhupada to? Of course, Srila Prabhupada would always bite from the prasadam, and then he would hand it out. So the only prasadam they had was, you know, the maha from, you know, the previous offerings. So he went out and asked Pushta Krishna Maharaj, who was Prabhupada's secretary, said, you know, should I offer Srila Prabhupada the maha that we have? It's just, you know, from the offerings. And Pushta Krishna Maharaj said, no, I don't think so. But Radhanath Maharaj, he was thinking that, you know, Srila Prabhupada really likes, you know, doing this. I'd better get another opinion. So he asked Prajumna, who was the Sanskrit scholar who was traveling with Srila Prabhupada. And Prajumna told him, yeah, you should offer him some prasadam. So Radhanath made up on the deity's plate a whole plate of prasadam with, you know, sabjis and gulab jamuns and sweets, a big plate of prasadam on Radha Vrindavan Nath's plate. And so after the class, after questions, he came out and he gave Srila Prabhupada this plate of prasadam. And Srila Prabhupada very graciously, you know, took the plate and the spoon, and he started, you know, tasting the prasadam. There was, you know, like sabjis and, you know, all sorts of things. And, you know, with the deity spoon he was eating, and then he would take some and he would start, you know, giving it out to all the devotees. And of course we were, you know, ecstatic that, you know, getting some remnants personally from Srila Prabhupada. And then I remember there was two big gulab jamuns on his plate. And Srila Prabhupada picked up the gulab jamun and kind of looked around at everybody, and everybody was, you know, cheering him. You know, Jai Srila Prabhupada. And they were, you know, big golden gulab jamuns, you know, just dripping with, you know, the sugar juice. And Prabhupada, with a very big smile, he bit into the gulab jamun and it squirted juice, you know, on all the devotees that were there in the front. You know, and then he handed it out. And there was two of them and he took up the other one. Same thing. You know, with a big smile, he bit into it. And the devotees in the front got sprayed by this gulab jamun juice. And the other thing is that after, like, eating some of the sabji and passing it out, and then he gave the bowl out also. And people were thinking, oh, I got a bowl, you know, from Srila Prabhupada. And afterwards, because that was the deity's, you know, silver, you know, plates, Radhanath Maharaj had to go around and get them back from the people, and they didn't want to give them back. They were thinking, oh, Srila Prabhupada, you know, gave me this bowl. But he got them back from the from all the devotees. And that happened, and that's the picture before all this, right there of Srila Prabhupada sitting on the Vyasasan up at the old Vrindavan farm. This was probably the very near the end of June in 1976. Which was a very wonderful time. And just thinking of some other, like, pastimes when Srila Prabhupada had different moods, and he used to give a darshan every evening. And did you go to some of those darshans? Yeah, he was living at the Brahmachari farm. He was helping Radhanath Maharaj. But I got to go to them, and Srila Prabhupada, he was in different moods. Sometimes he was, you know, just like very fiery. And this one time, he was a one of the Radha Damodar bus leaders. And he asked a question to Srila Prabhupada. He said, you know, I met some person while distributing books, and he said that, you know, I'm personally, you know, in contact to God. You know, I don't need to read these books. I have a personal, you know, relationship with God. You know, what should we say to them? And Srila Prabhupada said, why are you asking this question? Don't you know? And then he said, no, this is just somebody, you know, asked me this question. I'm not asking the question. And Prabhupada said, why are you asking this question? And then he said, don't you read my books? And then Pushnakrishna, who was sitting right next to Srila Prabhupada, said, no, it's not his question. He's just, you know, asking a question that somebody asked him. And Prabhupada looked at Pushnakrishna and he said, he may be able to fool you, but he can't fool me. And then again he said, why don't you read my books? These things are answered in my books. Why aren't you reading my books? And of course everybody was quiet. But Srila Prabhupada, he was very, I still remember him so well, that he may be able to fool you, but he can't fool me. And Prabhupada very strongly made that point. And I don't remember exactly, though. He did go on to answer how, you know, it says in Bhagavad Gita who actually Krishna, you know, speaks to, only his unalloyed devotees. And also, it might have been the same darshan that Srila Prabhupada was, he saw Mother Gopalakshmi Priya, who was a little chilly, and she was just, you know, sitting there very humbly, didn't say anything. And Srila Prabhupada, who just out of, you know, out of his compassion, looking at her, he said, are you okay? Are you warm enough? And she was just so shy, you know, she didn't say anything. And then Kaladri, who was the temple president, said, oh, she's just happy to, you know, be here in your presence, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, he said, no. He said, you should take care of the women. He said, they're very shy and they won't ask, but you should at least once a month, you should ask from them if they need anything. And you have to make sure that you're protecting the women properly. And I can remember, though, just how Srila Prabhupada's mood was when Claudry, who was the temple president at that time, you know, said, oh, she's just happy to, you know, be in your association or be there. And Prabhupada said, no. You have to take care and make sure that the women are protected. That was, you know, one instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave. And Srila Prabhupada, he was so compassionate. And this is when I was, you know, reading this prayer by Lord Shiva. Also, it was Lord Shiva, his compassion. This compassion is such a great thing. Lord Shiva also, out of his compassion, just appeared before the Prachetas because he kind of knew, not kind of, but he knew their desire and he wanted to help them. And we should also try to, you know, have this compassion and help, you know, of course, ourselves. We have to help ourselves, because without ourselves being pure or having this, we can't really give what we don't have. So we have to become pure ourselves, and then we can give it to others. But this giving it to others, it benefits not only the people that we give it to, but it helps us also. That's why, like, when I'm asked to give a class, I think that this is actually very purifying for me. It's a test for me, actually. And I'll try to say something. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.